I want to work with people who want to get it right at the beginning and say, let's get our people practices right at work, a great place to work.
Emma Davies is a distinguished HR leader renowned for her ability to drive cultural change and foster people-centric organisations.
You spend so much time at work as a human, it has to be something you're passionate about.
Not only has Emma been recognised as a HR leader of the year for the Middle East, but she's also the visionary founder of the Evolve People Network.
We do absolutely everything. So I actually don't call it HR anymore. I call it people and culture because it's about the people in the business. But yeah, we do pretty much everything for them. If you've got an employee who's struggling, you're responsible for them. You want to know that they're okay. So having a great people leader in your business is fundamental. It's as important as your CFO.
Can't stress enough how important it is in businesses to manage people effectively. It's so poor in so many companies. And if you have a company that experiences a large number of people leaving every year or an unhappy workforce, then maybe, just maybe, this podcast is for you. So let's talk about the Megaverse, the internet of people. Shaping the next iteration of the internet, Megaverse is powered by revolutionary blockchain technology built on decentralized community ownership. It offers users, brands, and businesses a seamless, regulated, and transparent opportunity for growth, revenue, and community building. Megaverse is accelerating user adoption and achieving these goals through multiple verticals like Megachain, a high-performance blockchain for tamper-proof transactions, Megafile system for encrypted decentralized storage, and MegaStudio, which democratizes development through collaborative and AI elements. Organizations across industries like Dubai Multi-Commodities Center, Dubai World Trade Center, and Ras Al Khaimah Government have already explored the lucrative potential of a Megaverse presence. Megaverse enables users to create a Web3 future for the people where technology serves human purposes. Dive in and discover the internet of people with Megaverse today. Emma Davies, thank you so much for coming to join us today.
Thank you for having me.
Don't be nervous.
I'm a little bit nervous.
So for the benefit of everyone that doesn't know you and hasn't had the chance to talk to you like I have, please explain what you do and why you do it.
So I'm the Curious Catalyst Coach, but actually I run a business called Evolve Hub. That's the main business. And the reason I do that is I've been in HR in the Middle East for 16 years now, which I've loved, really, really loved. And the impact I've got to have on people's lives was amazing, but I wanted to have more impact. So I came out of the corporate world back in October. So it's still very, very new, and launched my own business, which has got three kind of streams to it. So the Curious Catalyst Coaching, and everyone's like, why did you choose that name? Like, I'm always complex with names. And it's because I believe curiosity is really, really important, especially when you're coaching. But Evolve Hub is around evolving people and working with small businesses, because you talked about something earlier about CFOs and HR. Businesses set up and they get a CEO, they get a COO, they get a CTO and a CFO, and they go, we'll sort the people problems ourselves. And then it goes wrong. And then they ring me to fix it, which is brilliant. But I want to work with people who want to get it right at the beginning and say, let's get our people practices right and make a work a great place to work, not just in words.
Okay. So why do you do that?
Because I'm passionate about improving workplaces for people. And I think that things like, you know, we're all saying, oh, return to work. Let's all go back to the office 5 days a week. Let's look at our hours, those kind of things. You spend so much time at work as a human. It has to be something you're passionate about. And I've done that in my career as HR. It's always been really important to me. But the benefit for the business is if you have great people who are passionate about what you do, your profit will increase. That's a fact of life. We all know that. But so many businesses forget it. And I remember when I was interviewed for my last job and the CEO said to me, why do I even need HR? You know, tell me what you're going to do. And I said, well, have you got people? He said, yeah. I said, and people are your biggest asset. You might think it's your factory. You might think it's your machines, but it isn't. It's the humans. And unless you've got those people performing at their absolute best, you're not going to make money. And for me, those two things married together is why I do what I do.
So that, well, from what you just said, though, does that not lean into the fact that maybe it's more about leadership than it is about HR?
Yes, probably. I think that, I mean, gosh, I've seen some interesting leaders in my time, but we all know great leaders, and you know when you hear somebody talk about where they work and you know whether they've got a great leadership team or not, don't you? Because you know, especially in here where we're all expats and you meet people, first question is, what do you do? Do you know what I mean? You wouldn't necessarily ask that if you met someone in your home country. And you see people's faces light up when they talk about a great employer, and it's down to great leaders. It's got to be. So my role fits into that as a leader, really, I think, as well. And I've been a leader in the businesses that I've worked here, and we've seen success through that. People think we just process visas.
Mm. Okay, let's make sure that for everyone's benefit, they understand the difference. How does HR compare in the United States to the UK and Europe and to the Middle East?
Wow. So it's really different here. And I think that's really important that people do understand that. So in the UK, if I was an HR professional, and I could never go back and work there, I'd be fired within about 3 minutes probably. So you look after your employees. Yes, you do. And now there is a bigger sense of well-being since COVID in the UK, but it's very focused on employment law. So if you speak to HR professionals in the UK, they'll say to you, these are the employment laws that are changing. This is about to happen. Here, whilst we've got employment law, we look after end-to-end employee life cycle. And when I say end-to-end, I don't mean onboarding and offboarding employees in the workplace. You know, people, if someone's here and they die, it comes to the HR team. We have to sort that problem with the family. Family's never on their own. I've done everything from finding people houses, looking after children, getting kids into school. And people might say, well, that's not really HR. Well, by doing those things for families, if we've got happy families as well, happy employees, we've got better employees, you know, but better performance. So HR here is end to end. I've had babies born at 21 weeks and had to sort out intensive care places for them, liaise with hospitals. It's just stuff you wouldn't naturally do in the UK or America. You would worry about those people. And there's nothing wrong with HR in the UK or the US when I say that, but you don't naturally have to do it. You don't worry. You know, here, because your visa, unless you've got a golden visa, is linked to your linked to your employer, we're responsible for those people, and people are expats. They are away from home. So we do absolutely everything. So I actually don't call it HR anymore. I call it people and culture, because it's about the people in the business. But yeah, we do pretty much everything for them.
How is HR perceived by business leaders in this part of the world comparatively to other countries?
There's some great leaders here who know that HR, good HR, is what you need in your business. But there's a lot who perceive us as a visa and admin process center. You know, get my visas, get the people on board and get them working. Where you've got great leadership, they understand that your people and culture lead is your business partner. So they are, I mean, like, again, it's your biggest asset. Why wouldn't you have somebody great leading it? And why wouldn't you do the right things for your employees? So I think that's something that's really important to me. But it's part of your business. It's people problems. I mean, you run many businesses. You know, probably if I said to you, what keeps you awake at night? I remember the last person I said that to said nothing. They're asleep. I was good. But people problems, people challenges, you know, because if you've got an employee who's struggling, you're responsible for them. You want to know that they're okay. So having a great people leader in your business is fundamental. It's as important as your CFO.
And when you talk about leadership, do you think that most people that move into leadership roles in this part of the world get promoted but don't get trained?
Yes, absolutely. And do you know what we do? We promote them because they've done really well. So this happens at manager level as well. So what happens is you've got a great employee. And what we should also remember is not all employees want to be leaders. You know, some people just want to get on and do their job, and that's okay. And we should leave those people to it. It's not quiet quitting. Just let them do the job that they're paid to do. So we have someone who's doing a great job, and then we go, oh, we're going to promote you because you're so good at that. I'm going to make you a manager, and now you're going to look after other people. Very rarely train them, very rarely give them any support, and then they fail. Whose fault's that?
The employer.
It's the employer's fault. And it's the same with leaders. Oh, you've been here a long time. We're going to put you in a leadership role, but we're not going to train you. We're not going to develop you. We're not going to give you a coach. We're not going to do any of that. We're going to expect you to now lead divisions, businesses, people. And it's all back to the people. And we're just going to let you flounder by yourself.
It's common sense, yeah?
It is, but it's not very common.
So why?
Because there's an assumption that people will just naturally fit into leadership roles. And again, I'll go back to my statement. You know great leaders. I know great leaders and I know bad leaders. And bad leaders aren't necessarily always doing it on purpose either. That's the other thing. They're struggling and they don't get support from their businesses. So, and that's your people and culture leader's role to identify that and make sure that they do get support. But it's around, some people are naturally also good leaders, but not very good at the work side of things. And that's okay to have those in business as well, because if they're bringing other people with them, that's what leadership is to me. It's bring everybody together to create the same thing, which is ultimately, as any business owner would say, profit for the business and a great place to work.
I find that the structure that companies put in place has this gap. They don't realize that at first. They sometimes don't realize that later on, even if they've been educated to understand that. But then they wonder why people leave. And when you look at the statistics here, 20% of all employees are leaving every year. My belief is if you're not working for a great leader and you're an employee of a company, invariably that's going to be one of the reasons that you're going to consider doing something else. And then you take into consideration the cost of replacing that person. And it's like, it becomes a no-brainer.
Absolutely. And nobody.
So if it becomes, so you agree, it becomes a no-brainer. So then if it is a no-brainer, and there are countless examples of this over and over and over again, what is stopping an SME focusing on this area at the beginning?
Because I don't think it's common sense. I don't think they understand it. So most people don't even understand that cost to hire part that you just talked about. They really don't. People will say employees are, you know, they're extendable, you know, expendable, is that the right word? You know, I don't need them. I can change them. So I can give you a fact that if I've got an employee in my business earns 4,000 dirhams a month, so a very junior employee, if that person leaves, to replace them costs me anywhere between 13 and 20,000 dirhams. Those figures are not talked about. Businesses don't understand that. And cost of an executive transition failing can be $400,000.
Wow.
And nobody talks about it. Nobody says. There's a great coach out there, Naveed. He does training on this. And we got him in to talk to us because we were like, hang on, what's the cost of failure? Nobody knows and nobody talks about it because it's not tangible. It's not physical. I can't see it on paper. I can tell you the visa cost. I can tell you what those cost. But I can't tell you the cost to train because I don't know, because I probably don't do any training. And that's the problem that SMEs certainly have. They say, well, we'll just get someone new in. Probably also pay them more. That's the other thing that you forget, that you go, well, we're paying that person 10. Now the market's changed. We're going to pay 12. Why don't... And I had this exact conversation this morning with someone who said to me, you know, people are leaving. I haven't got a great leader. What does that look like? And I said, you change the leader. That's the problem. If that, I can't help you with this problem as long as the leader's in place, because that's not going to change. What's going to change? That's the problem. You've identified it. And people are leaving and now your costs are higher, but also you're employing people on more money, which businesses, again, and that's why business leaders need people and culture professionals who understand these things by their side all the time. I call myself, I'm the little angel on your shoulder who sits and tells you this information, because if you're not sharing it with your businesses, and most people don't because they just want to get on and do a job. And also, when you've got lots of people, you hear it all the time, you know, well, we've got an HR manager. Have you trained them? Have you talked to them about these things? They're not equipped to deal with it. And so that's why they use things like our network to say, how do I deal with this? Because they're not supported either.
How do you make employees happy?
Well, I tell you now, it's not by giving everybody a pay rise. Contrary to popular belief, you could give everybody a pay rise tomorrow in your business. How many minutes do you think it would be before you got the first phone call complaining?
Well, that's an interesting question. I've heard that if you give someone a pay rise, it lasts 3 days.
Yeah, probably not even that long. Because if you gave everybody a blanket pay rise in your business, somebody would say to you, "But hang on, Spencer, I'm performing better than that person. Why have I got the same?" So you've instantly created conflict, okay? And here, everybody shares salary information. I've literally had to have supervisors in my office years and years ago, this was, and they've all bought me each other's letters. They've photocopied it. I'm going, you can't share that information. Why? And they do. Well, because I don't think, I'm personal about salary. I don't think I should be sharing my salary
information. It's my salary. If I want to share it, I can.
You can, I agree. And they did. And it created absolute carnage for us as a business. So if you've got people and you're going to, sorry, we'll go back to the pay rise thing, that it creates chaos by giving everybody a blanket pay rise. So then you do it based on performance. But we're also not good at telling people about their performance. We don't train managers in it. So I can sit here and say to you, person X is a top performer, they're given this. Person Y isn't, so they're given this. But we don't tell people. We're not transparent. We just go, that's what it is. I know some companies don't even tell people what their pay rises are. They assume that their employee checks their bank account. Well, you have to have conversations about this stuff. But so, sorry, I've lost track on what we were talking about then, about the pay rises, sorry, yeah, and how to make employees happy.
When we talk about happiness in a business, there's obviously many facets to make people happy within a business, and pay rises aren't the answer.
Pay fair
is the answer.
Pay fair, yeah. So if
you... you're buggered if you do and you're buggered if
you don't. Yeah, you are. When it comes to salary, yeah, you are. People are always going to want more. That's a fact of life. That's a human trait that most people have.
Yeah.
I want more. I deserve more. You know, the amount of calls I've had of people saying, well, I've been here 8 years. I need a promotion. That's not how life works. You know, what's different about your job? What are you doing differently? And I challenge people and say, what are you doing differently? What's changed in your job since then? Because not everybody is going to be on that leadership ladder. But employees will be happy if they have a fair environment. They've got a transparent environment so they know they can come and talk to people. So people say to me, I don't know, you're the CRHO. Why are you having conversations with employees all day? That's actually my job. That's what my job was. Other people I know sit in an office and don't talk to anybody. And you don't have to say yes all the time. That's really, really important. And I say that to people, I'll listen to your problem. I'm not necessarily going to say yes, but I am going to try and help you solve that problem. And it might be the answer is no to a pay rise. But transparent, fair pay, being open all the time with people with what's going on in your business, making it, again, nice place to work. What does a nice place to work look like for people? Some people don't want to come in the office, some people do. See, this for me was a real eye-opener. I assumed everybody wanted to work from home. That was an assumption I made when COVID happened.
Wow.
And I got a call from somebody to say, I cannot work from home. I cannot. He was a single lad, young lad. And he said, I can't do this, Emma, because I haven't, this was during COVID. We were allowed to come into the office because we were obviously delivering water. And he said, I can't do it. He said, and I can't do it because I haven't seen another human for 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. I need some contact.
Mm-hmm.
I was astounded. Because I was really lucky. I was in a villa with my family and I was safe and I'd got all my kids with me, had all of them at that time, and was having an okay time. So when I then opened the office and said to people, come in, the amount of people that came into that office to work, because there's things like shared accommodation. Mm. You know, they couldn't work from home. Some of them were sharing accommodation with people who were in hospitality. They were like, I don't want to be there. I want to be at the office. So things like that, by listening, I think there's, you know, I learned a lot during that time, and that's how employees are happy. I mean, one of the stories we had was, again, I assumed our employees were scared of catching COVID. So I used to do WhatsApp videos, quite sad, every day just to kind of check in with everybody, and it got, you know, distributed and I got a lot of feedback. And our drivers and helpers, the people who are the core of our business, so, and I think it's really, really crucial that we remember they are your essential workforce, you know, and they said to me, we're not worried about catching COVID. What we're worried about is getting our money back home to our families. So are you going to pay us? I was like, we've never not paid you. That's my bugbear about this region where people think they can get away with things like that. So of course we're going to pay you, and we're going to pay you on time, and we're going to pay you a bonus because you're out doing this. You're putting yourselves out there. And we didn't know the risks or anything then. It was very, very new. So luckily enough, I worked for a big conglomerate who had access to that. We were able to get an ATM to our staff accommodation where they were able to withdraw their salaries, and we were able to transfer that for them. Didn't lose a dirham. Not one family went without salary during that time. Now, I could have just assumed and carried on that assumption that they don't want to go out, they don't want to get COVID, but they didn't. They wanted to work, but they wanted to be able to keep their families and send their salaries. And for me, they're the things that keep employees happy. That we didn't lose anybody during that time, an attrition rate, even when kind of we were all back at work after COVID, because of what we did during COVID.
I believe that if you help somebody work towards what they want to achieve in life, invariably they'll feel that they're not alone, they feel they're supported, and they feel that they'll have some sense of mission and purpose around what they do. And you're seen as an ally, as a leader, more than anything else. Is that a fair statement to make?
Absolutely.
Okay. What we're talking about here seems to me really logical. What baffles me is how it seems to be illogical is not the word. It seems to be ignored more often than it's not, which then comes or creates a large cost for the business. If that business were then to see that cost on a TV screen every day, or a flashing something, or, you know, a piece of paperwork around the office every day, or an email saying this has cost you $1,000 today or so on, it wouldn't take long before they went, hold on a minute here. So is it the responsibility of people like you in companies like yours to show them these costs and the damaging impact it has on the business?
Yes, absolutely. If you've got a high attrition rate, it's damaging your business. Mm. Absolutely. It's really interesting, the work I've done previously. You know, everybody hates performance management. Nobody wants to sit and have that performance review. You know, everyone's like, oh, got to sit and do that. So, but it's not until you start doing things like that and having open, honest conversations with leaders and business owners about those real costs of what it can look like to you. One of the things we did in one of my previous roles was, because everybody hated performance reviews, I created what was called a compass. And that compass had, and it was behavioral based, okay? It wasn't about technical stuff, because technical stuff you can teach. Behavior, if you've got everybody with the right behavior in your business, you shouldn't have a high attrition rate. And we did it very simply. The compass had lots of behaviors on it, and we scored you and you scored yourself whether you were green, red, or amber. Now, to sit in the leadership team, that compass had to be green. And where we had leaders who were on the outskirts of that, we developed them where we could. So we did a big development program for them. And if they still stayed red, then they weren't necessarily in the business forever. Now, we took that right down to every single member of staff, because we realized by having the right behaviors, we wouldn't have a high attrition, and therefore we wouldn't have that cost, because we did understand what that cost was. And it is important that we talk about it. And it's important that HR leaders are talking about it. But it's really difficult if HR don't have a seat at the table. And I hate that analogy, because sometimes we've got a seat at the table, but we get to the end of a board meeting and they go, oh, we forgot the people bit. Do you just want to run through it in 5 minutes? People should be above finance on your board meeting agendas.
Let's talk about coaching. You identify the problem. How do you coach a company or leaders through that problem and out the other side? What's the process?
So my coaching is quite direct.
I can see from the way you talk.
And everybody's, when I first hit my coaching qualification, and I obviously had to have a coach, she said to me, you talk a lot. How are you going to be able to coach people? Because coaching is all about listening. Now, in my mind, that's changed. That's really grown. The coaching industry has changed. And it's about active listening. But I also do, and I'll say to people I'm coaching, do you want Emma or do you want coach today? Because we'll identify a problem. And most people, do you know what they say?
Emma.
And because my style is direct, so we'll identify a problem and we'll talk it through. And I think my background, business and HR, leads us to be able to get to the answer very, very quickly. I don't think necessarily, and I love the idea of helping people unlock their own resources and all of that we talk about in coaching, because the answer, people normally have the answer. They just use me as a guide to get them to that. But sometimes there's different roads and different ways to go on. So it really depends on the problem and the client. But I think most people now see that coaching is different to learning and development. And I can send you on a training course to learn technical skills, but behavior is different. It's in readiness, isn't it? You can't, it's very difficult to change. But And sometimes some conversations I've had to have with people are, that's not the right environment for you. You need to make a decision. And they do. But sitting, working with me opens that up, opens that conversation where they don't, may not have that resource in their life normally.
Talk to me about quiet quitting. What is quiet quitting?
It's something that certain people made up to talk about something. It's a bit like the war on talent. And it's always negative, isn't it, around people? Why? People want, lots of people want to come to work and do their job. They're not quiet quitters. They just want to get on with it. They don't want any responsibility. They want to earn their salary. So that's when we go back to what makes a good business, fair, transparent, that works for those people. People who are quietly quitting are actually disengaged employees. And that's a problem for the employer. Because if you've got disengaged employees, something's going wrong. And it probably is things like, you haven't been transparent about pay. You haven't looked at your culture. And culture is so important in everybody's business. And I struggle to measure culture. People often say to me, you know, how do you measure it? How do you... And I've said, come to my office. Come to our office and you can feel culture. And it was when other HR people started saying, I love coming to your office because I can feel all the culture in here. Because we didn't have quiet quitters. Because we were communicating all the time. And a good people and culture person will be able to say to you, that person is a flight risk. I'm a flight risk, even though here I know there's people like, sorry, what do you mean? That they're going to leave you. And they're going to leave you for different reasons. And if it's a bad leader, you've got to deal with that. If it's pay, have a conversation. But I don't believe quiet quitting is a thing. It's disengaged employees. It's
HR departments are responsible for the recruitment process often in businesses. Do you think HR departments are good recruiters?
No, I could never be a recruiter. I'd last about 3 minutes.
Not as a recruitment company, though. They deal with the recruitment agency. The candidates get sent to them and then the HR department typically interviews them for the role.
No,
who teaches them to be good at interviewing?
Okay, so I've always done things quite differently. I have bar setter interviews. So before
what?
A bar setting interview.
What's that?
So before you get to meet the manager who's going to do the interview, because I'm not going to do the manager interview, I'm not going to do technical stuff. I don't know that. I don't know what you should be doing. I check for culture.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to get to me first. And everybody used to say, but you're the CHRO. Why are you doing that with most members of staff? I said, because culture is so important to us as a business. I don't want somebody coming in here who's got the wrong attitude. And when I've worked with recruitment agencies, they have known me so well that they won't put anybody in front of me that wouldn't pass that interview. And that's the benefit of having a recruitment agency and having a good relationship with them. Because if they're just sending you CVs, they're not doing their job. And there's a lot that will just happily do that. But so you get to me, you get a bar setter interview, and then you get to the manager. Managers have to be trained in interview techniques because... Again, but we don't. It's not something we do naturally. Mm. People, I've trained people in it, but I can't train you on the technical side of what that job looks like. So the manager has to do that. You need a really good, strong recruitment person in an HR team, whether you use agencies or not. So I've worked with a lady. She's an absolute rock star, and that we actually changed her title to be recruitment rock star because she. This candidate she gave us that, again, didn't need to go through a bar setting interview with me because she'd done that, but that comes with time and learning. As an HR person, I am not a recruiter.
I was asked, I used to have a training business, and in the training business, I was asked to train salespeople. And I'd go into a business and I'd say, what's the problem? The salespeople are underperforming. Okay, so who do they report to? They report to the sales managers. Okay. And who trains the sales managers? And obviously the answer was no one. Who do the sales managers report into? The managing director. Okay. And who's trained the managing director? Well, this is that. Who does the managing director report into? The chairman. And I'm like, I can come in and I can train your salespeople. It will last 5 minutes. They'll run through walls for me and then they'll forget. Because where's the implementation of the training when I'm not here? Well, that has to be the sales manager. So essentially, I'm doing the sales manager's job for them. Why are you asking me to do that? We just need our guys to write more business and make more sales. I'm like, yeah, but if you got to fix something, you got to fix you as the chairman first.
Absolutely.
when you have those types of conversations, maybe not in exactly the same way, are chairmen and CEOs open to their own personal development?
The majority that I'm dealing with now, yes. But I know there's people that aren't. And they don't see that they're the problem. And I think, but that goes back to that promotions we talked about earlier. Your sales manager was probably a really good salesman.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Top form. I'm going to promote you to sales manager. But they don't give any training. Do you know when the first crash happened here? I think it was 2008. I'd actually just moved here. Which was the first department that got fired?
The first department in the crash?
Yeah. In businesses.
Sales?
No, no.
Oh.
Learning and development.
L&D.
Yeah. Oh, we don't need to do that anymore. That was a nice to have. Hang on.
Learning and development was a nice to
have. It was a nice to have. Hang on a second. So we've now got, we need people to act really differently now because there's a crash. We've got to, you know, things are changing. We'll just fire the L&D department.
But that's the same as an individual when they get into financial difficulty, stopping their insurance policies rather than stopping going to the pub.
Exactly.
Makes no sense.
Yep. I can't see the benefit of it for me right here, right now, so I'll get rid of it.
Name a company that you know that has, or you, that is well known for having a great environment to work in.
Every company I've worked for has. That's why I've been there and I've stayed there. I mean, you look at Alec Construction, that business was outstanding for a great place to work. And it wasn't that we went off and bought awards about great place to work, because they're really, really expensive, some of those things. We just did the right thing by people. But when I went into that role, the CEO, who is my mentor still to this day, said to me, everybody hates HR. And every time I go onto site, I get complaints. If you can fix that for me, you can have this job, because I'd come in at a lower level and I'd gone back to basics. And all I did was go out and talk to people. And again, not everything had a solution or a yes answer. But I went out and spoke to people to find out what the real problems were.
Yeah.
And the problem was, first of all, communication. Nobody gets back to us. We ask a question, we don't hear from anybody. So I did things like put a 36-hour KPI in for the team and said, you have to respond to people, you know. So for me, Alec was an absolutely incredible place to work. Masafi, at the end, the work we did there around culture. And again, it's not just about having pizza on a Friday. It was about where people feel safe in an environment.
Safe. When you look at workplace culture and successful environments, and there seems to be always an energy about the place, doesn't there? There seems to be a kind of like a buzz.
Yep.
You know, famously, British Airways used to struggle with getting stewardesses because they'd rather work for Virgin, even though they were paid less.
Yep.
And I find that quite interesting, how they were driven by the environment more than they were driven by the money.
I think that's going to happen a lot more in the future as well. And it's slightly different here because everybody is here to earn cash. We're expats. So, you know, that's what a lot of people say. And a lot of people are just sending that money home and they're supporting entire families. But I hear so much more now in interviews, when I do those bar sitting interviews, tell me about your culture. Tell me what that looks like. And I say, well, look, I'm going to sell this to you because this is my job. Talk to my employees. Talk to somebody in the business. Don't just rely on me, because if you're looking for a cultural fit, you need to understand where we are. And I think some people sort of assume, well, culture is just the fun side of stuff, but it isn't. Culture is about being accountable. So that's what we were always said at Masafi. You're accountable. You're allowed to make decisions, but you need to be accountable for those decisions. So don't come and work for us and think that you don't have to do anything. We're a doing company. We're dynamic. We're agile. That's what we are. If that doesn't work for you, don't come and work for us. And I think that is what people like. They like to know what's expected of them, so then they can achieve.
Mm, absolutely. When you look at different scenarios around medical insurance over the years, I've seen that some companies have said, you know what, we're all equal, let's all have the same policy. Or the majority of companies give the shittiest, crappiest insurance for the lower ranking employees and the special, nice, top of the range stuff for the, you know, the C-suite.
Yep.
What's your feeling around that?
Look, medical insurance is a critical part of employment for me here. It was something that I have always been driven to get the best for our employees. And people often say to me, but you're increasing, CFO, you're increasing our cost by doing that. And I've said, yes, but you don't know you need it until you need it. And when we've then got somebody in hospital who's got rubbish insurance, I'm sorry, but we are going to be paying for that care. We will be, because that is our, we should do that as employers. And people find that quite funny about me, because they're like, normally HR people don't, you know, you've got insurance, that's it. For me, that would be a driver for a job. I would look at, if somebody said to me, I want to employ you, I would ask about their medical insurance policy first of all, before I did anything else, because it's so important, especially in this region. And so things like, people don't understand medical insurance here either. Mm. They think your limit on your policy is a bit like a goal. My husband often tells me my credit card limit isn't a goal either. But I went into businesses, and this was the first thing I did at ALEC and at SFE. And I looked at our medical insurance policy, and it wasn't good. And I said, why isn't it good? What's wrong with it? And it's all because we've overutilized it, because nobody was managing it. And that's a big role for people and culture people here, that you have to manage the medical insurance. So if your sick leave policy, again, comes back to trust and the medical insurance, is if you want to go to a doctor's appointment, you need to get a sick leave certificate. What? So if I don't feel very well today, and I'm, honestly, people who come to the offices with colds and flu drive me mental, don't be sharing germs. Go home and work from home if you're well enough. If you're sick, go home and be sick. I changed our policy at SAFI as soon as I got there to be a 3-day thing. Because I think, you know, I've got a bit of a stomach, something's wrong, 3 days. And it changed our utilisation on our medical insurance. So we saved money. Again, nobody tells leaders and the CEOs and CFOs things like that. If you've got a person, and I have had in every business, who is dedicated to working with the broker and the insurance to make sure it's managed properly and fairly, you can afford good medical insurance for your employees. You absolutely can. And that is such a big thing for people here. You know, knowing that you can take your child to a hospital of your choice in an emergency is important. Not thinking, I'm going to have to drive around to try and find someone that will accept my insurance. So for me, medical insurance is an absolute must, and it should be done well.
So that's interesting, you know, comparing medical insurance per interview you take, okay, and what is your medical insurance? And a reason to stay with a company as well is there's really good medical insurance, you know, they look after us.
Yes, they care. Yeah. It's a fact of care. It's, again, back to safety. It's something that, again, you can't quantify it. And lots of people do that, I think, or don't do that. When they look at a job, they go, oh, you're going to pay me X. And then they don't worry about the medical insurance. And when it goes wrong, is when you're going to worry about it. And I know I had somebody once I worked with, and this person said, look, I'm going to work for this company. They're paying me double what you are. And I also don't agree with counteroffers. So I never, ever try and retain someone if they're resigning, because they've mentally checked out. They've made a decision. And they said to me, but I'm now going to have to pay for my own medical insurance. And I was like, oh, wow. Have you looked at that? No, it'll be fine. I'll just get a policy. What do you think the call was in 6 months' time? I bought a policy. It isn't what I need. It was what I could afford because I was trying to save money, because I saw that cash package. And you go, well, that's it. It is so important. It really is.
How important is team building?
It depends what we define as team building.
A regular event once every month, 2 months, 3 months, where you get everyone together to enjoy an experience that's away from the work environment, so people can connect with each other on a different level.
Yeah. So if you are asking people to do that on a weekend, I don't believe that's right. Mm-hmm. Because that's my time with my family, and we get limited time because we're all back probably in the office 5 days a week. So team building has to be a benefit. I'm always a big believer in think win-win. So there's got to be a win for me as an employer and a win for the employee. So if it's a family day, something they can do with their families and they want to come, we never ever enforce you must come and do this, because some people are not comfortable with that, then, you know. But every team building event I've done has had learning as well. Yeah. And an understanding. So something's going to come out of it. We're all going to get a benefit. I'm going to get a benefit as a business, and you are going to get a benefit as an employee. You know, I think people who do take teams out for dinner and stuff, it's great, but you just have to think about the people that you're dealing with. You know, if and some people work 6 days a week. So if they get one day off, they don't want to be doing team building. So do it in work hours. And so many business owners go, oh, no, I don't want to do it in work hours. I'm like, but that's what we're paying them for. We're paying them to be there at that time. So let's take them out and go bowling, have lunch, and get somebody in to talk to us about great leadership.
Lots of stresses that are caused in the workplace are caused by financial stress. People don't understand money and don't understand how to manage money. There are all kinds of headaches that come from that. I mean, the amount of people we've seen that have got loan sharks and all kinds of drama attached to that. What responsibility is it of the employer to help educate employees?
Again, it's a bit of a thing here. You wouldn't have to do that in the UK or the US necessarily, I don't think. Or maybe an HR person wouldn't think they needed to. Here we know we have to. People get off the plane here on arrival and there is somebody waiting with a credit card for them.
Mm-hmm.
Here you go, here's a credit card with a limit you've probably never seen before in your life.
Yeah.
And people go, oh. And again, like I said, it's not a goal to hit that limit. Apparently I get told that every month. So you've got this credit card now. But the other thing I think that's really important is people aren't off out buying Louis Vuitton handbags. People use those credit cards to pay for things like flights to bring their family to see them. You know, if their families in their home country have got a medical issue, because not everybody has an NHS like we do in the UK, they have to pay for that medical, they have to pay for children's school fees. You know, they're using that money and they're not necessarily thinking about how they're going to pay it back. And it does become an employer's problem, because if you have got somebody who has got financial stress in your business, performance will be dipping. You can see it. And again, it's about having that knowledge and understanding of your people in your business. But the loan sharks will be calling your HR team. I was getting emails, please get this person to contact this bank, please, you know, and I would be bombarded with these emails 5 or 6 a day.
Mm.
So it does become my responsibility because it becomes my problem, you know, and then you hear people just say, well, I'm just not going to pay it. And hopefully they'll go away. And what was really interesting to me was I had one employee who had got some credit cards and again, not a big spender, but had used them for life and stopped paying them. And say the bill was 100,000, but the bill's now 400,000. And the response to me was, but they're not going to ask me for 400,000. They'll only want 100,000. And I was quite taken aback that somebody wouldn't understand that actually that was going to need to be paid.
Wow.
Because we're not educating people. So it's around, one of the things that we've always done is financial well-being. And until people are more, and again, it's a bit like the salary thing here. People are quite open about things here. So until you're having discussions with people who are saying to you, my credit card payments are 12,000 dirhams a month and I earn 8. Mm. And I've had a lot of sleepless nights about stuff like that, about worrying about my employees, because just paying it off isn't the answer. You know, companies could give you a loan. They could go, all right, we'll pay that. You pay it back. That's not actually the answer. You're not solving the problem.
But at the end of the day, someone has to take some responsibility somewhere. The reality is the individual has to take some responsibility. They can't shirk that responsibility. They've got to own it, yeah? You just as the HR department want to make sure they're armed with as much information that's valuable for them as possible so they can make better and better decisions, which reduces the risk on the business because they bring their best work when they are making good decisions.
Yeah, they're not sitting worrying about their phone and their constant text messages. And there's nothing, you know, why shouldn't we educate people in those kind of things? But it's finance, it's well-being, it's all of those things that I do believe is part of my role in HR, to help employees to perform better, because there is a business benefit as well. It's that win-win thing.
The thought of working 4 days for me is depressing.
Okay.
For me.
Yep.
I'm sure for other people that might be fantastic.
Yep.
But for me, the 4 days is depressing. I enjoy my work. I enjoy doing what I do. And because I enjoy that, I don't ever feel that it would be good to spend 4 days at work and 3 days not. Some experiments have demonstrated that it can work. Some experiments have demonstrated that it doesn't work, with the American companies, the banks trying to get people back to the office. What's your thoughts on this?
I think people are trying to get people back to the office because of the cost of their real estate. And they're going, we've got these big offices that we now can't get rid of. It's back down to trust, you know, and I'm again seeing so many people now who are saying, I don't want to do 5 days a week in an office. And it's not that I want to do work from home on a Friday because I can then get my washing done. It's because I don't have to commute that 2 hours from Sharjah to Dubai. Mm-hmm. It's a day off that drive and I'm saving fuel. Mm-hmm. It's so individual to businesses. And some, and I think if you've got a thing of trust, you might say work from home. Some people are never going to go back to an office. Mike, I've got a bigger concern about that though. My concern about people not being in offices is, where are we getting that social element from? Mm-hmm. You know, not having those people around us. And especially, you know, people who came out of universities after COVID have never worked in an office. They're not getting those, again, hate this word, water cooler moments. But there's also no reverse mentoring going on, or no mentoring. Because when you're working with people and you're sitting, and I always say, go on a training course, that's great. You can listen to a trainer, but you're going to learn more from other people in the room.
Yeah.
That's where the real learning comes from. And that we get that at work. But forcing people back into offices for things like that isn't an answer, and you're just going to get unhappy employees. Whereas if you sit down with people and say, we'd like you to work 3 or 4 days in the office because of things like this, we want you to mentor one another, we want to have a team camaraderie, we want those things, people will understand. Sending an email, a CEO sending an email on a Sunday night, everybody's back in the office from Monday, 5 days a week, 9 till 7, you know, that's not going to do much for your employee satisfaction.
Is this true? You've got a 97% employee satisfaction rate.
Did have, yes.
97%.
Yep. But remember something else on that. There's another figure that's actually more important. It's the amount of people who've filled in that satisfaction survey. Because if you've got 100 employees and 5 fill it in and you sit at 97%, is it really 97%?
That's marketing, baby.
It's about 100% response rate. So I'd rather be accredited for that. I'd rather people say, actually, and I do. And I've done
that. That sounds like a Ryanair thing, does it? 97% and five of our passengers.
Five of our passengers
were really happy.
Exactly. So it's, for me, it's about getting that response rate is actually the thing we should look at. Mm. But yes, 97% was at Musafi after COVID. And that's also really important, but it's the things we did for our people.
Give me your 3 top coaching strategies for employee satisfaction.
Oh, gosh. Coaching strategies for employee satisfaction. Give them coaching. So, and bit of an awkward one here because I'm a coach and I'm also the HR director, CRHO, whatever that is. It's very difficult to coach people that you might be having to have tough conversations with later down the line. So always I bring in external coaches, and I'm not just saying that because I'm a coach.
Yeah.
I think that's really important. So employee satisfaction, I coach my leaders that I'm working with on actually listening. Mm-hmm. Don't assume you know the answer. Taking action. If you're going to do an employee satisfaction survey or any kind of survey with your employees and you're going to ask questions and you're not going to do anything with that information, do not bother. Absolute waste of time. So take action. Do what you said you were going to do. Even if it's, I can't fix this right now for you, but I can in the future. Do something about it and share feedback. Those would be my 3 for employee satisfaction.
Okay, good. I like those. And then just give me let's take 3 in this example, 3 bad behaviors, okay, that you look out for in the workplace and how you deal with those 3 bad behaviors. I think about people, well, I have this big thing about everyone being offended. I said this earlier. I'm like, when people get offended by stuff, really gets on my nerves, because just because you're offended doesn't make you right.
No, everybody's entitled to their own opinion. Just because you don't agree with it doesn't make it wrong. That's theirs and it's theirs to own it. So own your opinion. You know, if you're going to be in the workplace, own your opinion. If you're going to be, I see a lot of people, there is still a bit of a thing of fear and people behave badly because of fear. Bullying is prevalent in a lot of workplaces, and bullying comes in very different forms. Bullying can be belittling somebody in a meeting. Again, goes back to that opinion. Don't belittle people in meetings. Listen, you might learn something. Don't have to agree with it. So, yeah, bullying, belittling, those kind of things that happen, own your opinion. And I don't know how to say what the word for the bad behaviour is, but I struggle with people who aren't accountable. Don't go into a job and not be accountable for what you say and what you do. You know, I've made poor decisions in business. I've made a decision on something that might not be right. But if you don't learn from that and you're not accountable for it and you don't own up, that for me is the worst thing. that would be the third.
That's really interesting, you know, because as much as it's always employer this, employer that, employer this, employer that, it's like, when do you take some responsibility here? You're an employee of a company, you accept the payment every month into your bank account, you accept the holidays. When do you take ownership of your situation rather than essentially hold everybody else apart from you accountable for the place you're at?
And that happens a lot. A lot of employees say, no, no, I'm here to earn my salary and therefore I don't need to be accountable. Well, that's why in our bar setting interviews, that was one of the first things is, are you accountable? Because you're going to be asked to be making decisions. And if you're not going to stand by that decision or you're going to go, oh, it was somebody else's fault, this isn't the business for you. But there might be other businesses out there where they don't want their employees to be accountable.
I'm loving chatting to you. Thank you so much for your time today. It's been really fantastic.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. It's really, really enjoyed.
It's good to get someone with your level of expertise and knowledge to sit and just kind of like lay it down in black and white, some of these challenges that exist, how you solve them, how people need to be far more aware than they actually are. And leaders, CEOs, CFOs of businesses, those guys that are out there right now that run these businesses, that have got employees, you dismiss a lot of this kind of stuff. You park it because there's other things you think are more important. But if you've got a fired up and thriving workforce, they're going to do more for you and they're going to help that business grow. So never underestimate the value of that.
Absolutely.
Emma, thank you so much.
Thank you.